Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
And welcome to The Parent Show. It's Thursday night on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Cathy Weston.
And I'm Lydia L. Corey.
Well, we're talking about wishful thinking tonight, aren't we, Lyd? Maybe not wishful thinking, but thinking in general.
Of a sort,
yes. We're talking about the benefits of philosophy for our children and how we can use it, philosophical thinking, in our parenting. Is there a value in children being familiar with philosophical thoughts and methods? Is it taught in schools, and should it be if it isn't? And it's important to stress that we're not just talking about A-levels, we're talking about very young children being introduced to philosophy. Now, we're hoping we've got Peter Worley, who's our first guest on the show this evening, on the phone. Peter is CEO of the Philosophy Foundation. And he's also the president of the SOFIA, which is the European Foundation for the Advancement of Doing Philosophy. He's written loads of books. They all look absolutely wonderful. I'm just looking at the very last one here, published in 2014, Once Upon an If, the Story Thinking Handbook. So wonderful stuff there, Peter Worley. And we'll be speaking later in the show to Dr. Catherine McCall, who's also a leading philosopher and educationalist who's been doing philosophy in schools for over 30 years. And indeed, next year will be the 30th year since she first came and did philosophy in schools in England. So what a lineup.
And fascinating. And the whole, I mean, I can't believe we're even talking about philosophy and kids. We're not talking about teenagers. We're talking about children of all ages. That's what we want to know. Is there a relevance for them, and what we do about it? And we have the perfect people on the Parents Show this evening to give us the answers to this, to our questions. Peter, I just want to start off with the most basic question. What is philosophy?
Okay, right. I think that there's a number of different strategies to answering this. First of all, the sound bite. So philosophy is, I often say to the children, that philosophy is about thinking. The next thing to say is that it's thinking about thought, but not in the way that psychologists do. I also think that philosophy can be broken down into four main topics, which can be put into four questions to make it nice and easy to approach. The first is, what is there, which is to do with reality. The second is, what can we know about what there is, which is to do with knowledge. The third is, what matters in what there is, which is to do with value, things like art, politics, and ethics. And then finally, there's what can be said about what there is. But there's also a process side to doing philosophy as well. And I've come up with 4 R's of philosophy. So the first R is that you have to respond to something that you find puzzling. Secondly, you then reflect on that thing, whatever it might be. After you've reflected on it, after you've asked the question, what is it? You then go to reasoning. You try to reason your way through to try and answer what that thing might be. And then finally, the reevaluation. You have to think, is my reasoning right? Is what I'm saying right? Or is there another way that I can think about this?
And Peter, let's try and apply that for all the parents listening to say they're around the dinner table on a Saturday evening and we'd like to have a stimulating and interesting chat with our kids about a topic. Give us a sort of an example of work in practice with children.
Well, a classic one that children often relate to is the concept of fairness. So, first of all, you know, a child might see something that seems a little odd in terms of how they understand what's fair. So, for instance, they might have it in their head that fairness is equal share. And I think that's a common conception that a lot of young people have, that having fair, you know, is being shared equally or having equal treatment. But then they might see someone in the class, for instance, somebody who's being getting more than their fair share of the teacher's attention, for instance. Now, in some cases, this might be someone who's naughty, and the children think they don't deserve that attention. On the other hand, it might be someone who has special needs and perhaps needs more attention. And that's a very different kind of thing. And suddenly the child's thinking, well, this doesn't seem fair.
I think as parents we can all relate to that sense.
Right.
Children have a very strong sense of justice and injustice, don't they?
Right. Well, certainly a strong sense of fairness. Whether it's a sense of justice or injustice is another thing, but they certainly want justice to be meted out very often by their parents. But if I continue with the example, so if they find something that they think is unfair, then a way to engage the children, and this is what I would do in the classroom and parents can do with their children, is to say, well, what do you think fairness is? And that's the reflective bit, you see. Now you're starting to get them to reflect on what actually fairness is. And usually in a group of children, this is much easier to do. So one child might say, well, fairness is getting what you want. Another child might then come forward with something like, well, sometimes, you know, if everyone got what they want, then, you know, that wouldn't be fair. So maybe that's not what fair is. And you can carry on like that. And they're starting to go through a reasoning process now because they're starting to justify their answers according to the reasons. Many of the children will reevaluate. So they might start off by saying that I think fairness is this. But at a later stage in the discussion, they may start to say, well, hang on, because of what that other person said in the class, maybe I'm wrong about that. And they'll start to reevaluate what they mean by fairness.
Now, Peter, does that mean they're beginning to think critically? Is the reevaluation, the R for reevaluation, does that actually mean they're beginning to think critically?
That's right. That's exactly right. They're already starting to, the process, the critical thinking, I suppose, is the whole process, the beginning to reflect on things, the subjecting that to reasoning. But you're right, the crucial thing for me is the reevaluative bit. And if people are not stopping and thinking, you know, is that right, then I'd go as far as to say that might not be philosophy if someone's not doing that bit.
Peter, can we just talk about critical thinking? I know that there's many parents don't really know what that means. We hear a lot about it in schools. They're trying to emphasise that it's a key skill, a key thinking skill that they value in exams, and certainly into higher education it's very much valued. So what is it in a nutshell? What are we trying to achieve as parents with critical thinking? How do we know our children are evolving to sort of think like that?
Right, well, I mean, first of all, the first stage to critical thinking is just getting the children to reflect, to ask the question, what is something? So that's the sort of simple, basic way in which you can encourage children to start to engage in critical thinking. But the really important bit is when they start looking at the reasoning which is given. So, critical thinking is basically about the use of arguments. And by arguments, I don't mean, you know, shouting at each other. I mean it in a more technical sense, that philosophers mean it, where they have a series of premises or reasons that they say in support of a conclusion. In other words, the thing that they think is true or right. And critical thinking is when somebody can look at what somebody said and say, well, hang on, that doesn't seem right. Because if you think that, then this wouldn't follow, sort of thing. So that's the idea behind critical thinking, is looking at someone's argument or the case that they're making, and seeing whether it stacks up, whether it makes sense, whether it actually, you know, is a good argument or not.
Is it almost being scientific, Peter? Is that how you'd describe it?
Oh, not scientific, not exactly. Although it's connected to science, because of course science is the sort of science is the science of looking at those kinds of arguments and making sure that your steps are all in the right order and you're doing the things at the right time and place. But I would say it's more to do with logic than it is to do with science. This is more to do with looking at how what you say sticks together. Now, I'm not suggesting that this is what philosophy is only. Philosophy is not just that. But that's the critical thinking bit of philosophy. And when people talk about critical thinking, that's usually what they're talking about. You know, does the argument that's been put forward make sense? Do the reasons actually genuinely go to show the conclusion?
And Peter, I have to say, we watched a video on your Philosophy Foundation website today. It was absolutely mesmerising. We did put it on Facebook and elsewhere because it shows you engaging with children in a classroom. And it was amazing that these young children were really engaged in a proper philosophical discussion,
right,
about matter and antimatter, and they were coming up with their own vocabulary.
That's right.
It was pure creativity and innovation. And I think it just, we hope that lots of listeners will watch it after the show, because you really get a flavour of how much children enjoy it.
And also, I think you've hit upon something else there that's important in philosophising. It's not just the critical thinking, it's also the creative thinking and the innovation. And in many ways, that's one. They're the things that we're not only are we trying to develop their reasoning skills, but also their ability to be creative in the way that they respond to problems. You know, I mean, everyone knows that children are brilliant at what philosophers call counterexamples. You know, coming up with an example that disproves something. And whenever somebody says something, children almost automatically say, "But what if?" and come up with a great example that will show, you know, that tries to show what you said to be false or not right. So they're very good at that kind of creative critical thinking, where they're having to think of a scenario creatively to you know, maybe refute somebody's claim.
And I think from what you're saying, often children, young children, are natural philosophers, if you like, whereas we sort of grow out of it. We, as adults, we might be afraid of having challenging arguments with friends about, you know, you don't have maybe the time to have arguments like that are
That's
so much
right.
fun.
Well, I mean, I think that certainly children have a natural disposition towards philosophy. I think that a little bit of guidance is often needed for them to sort of genuinely engage in philosophical discussion. They certainly have a natural disposition, an openness, a love of just playing, really. And I think that what we do when we work with the children is we try to just give them something intellectual to play with, to a bit, you know, to try out. And children love doing that. And it is interesting to see how that starts to, for whatever reason, that starts to sort of, that willingness to just play with ideas, I think, diminishes as they get older. By the time you get into sort of mid-secondary, many of the children will not have discussions about stuff until you can show them why it's useful and how it's going to serve them in their lives.
And Peter, I think a lot of people listening might assume, gosh, isn't that what teachers do? Isn't that happening in schools all the time, that our children are learning to question in that particular way? That it's not something that would happen so much at home but more at school. Would you agree with that? That it's a sort of an assumption?
Well, that's right. I mean, there are obviously, at school, that's what should be happening. You know, children should be engaging with thinking about stuff. Unfortunately, though, I think the problem with school is that there isn't often the time.
Yeah.
Teachers don't have the time to explore things in that sort of playful, exploratory way that philosophy allows. And that's one reason why philosophy is a good thing to do. And I think some of the head teachers that get us in to work with them are very much concerned about making sure that there's a kind of antidote to all the teaching to the test and the targets and the huge amount of curriculum material they have to get through, which unfortunately allows a lot of, you know, doesn't allow teachers to really use time in their teaching as much as they would like.
So, Peter, how does philosophy fit into schools nowadays? Should it be taught as a separate subject? Who should be taught from what age? How regularly? What's your dream vision for it?
Oh, right. Well, my dream vision would be to say both, that there is a separate subject, that it is taught as a separate subject. There's a special time in the week where children do philosophy, maybe with a specialist philosophy teacher, such as myself. But I also think that philosophy, or I should say philosophical kind of approaches to things, should be kind of integrated into normal teaching, so that teachers are finding the time to inquire into the subject areas that they're teaching. So it might not be doing philosophy as such, but they might be doing maths, and they might need to stop and think about, you know, exactly what is a number, exactly what is division. And to stop and actually inquire into these ideas, rather than always feeling as though they have to get through a bunch of content that they have to teach.
There's so much pressure on teachers, so much pressure on them that it's
right,
very difficult to find space in the curriculum. What about teacher training, Peter? Sure, I mean, I think there might be an assumption that these days our trainee teachers are you know, are au fait with what you're talking about. Would that be the case?
Well, teacher training, again, I think that it would be great to get this sort of stuff in, you know, philosophical stuff that I'm talking about. I mean, obviously, if it's going to be done in an integrative way, like I was just suggesting, then it needs to be something which is included in teacher training, inquiry skills, how to question. These things seem to me to be really important in teaching, whether or not you're teaching philosophy or regular stuff. You need to know how to question in the right kind of way to engender, you know, discussion and exploration of ideas. But it's also, I also think that whether or not one does philosophy, one of the big holes in teacher training is the fact that they don't do a lot of stuff on formal argumentation, which I was alluding to at the beginning, the critical thinking stuff. You know, do the premises, do the reasons go to support the conclusion, the thing I'm arguing for? And that's certainly something that I think should be included more in teacher training.
Could I just ask you, Peter, what age groups you're talking about for what level of kind of philosophical exposure?
Well, I work with all age groups. I do something in preparation for philosophy with nursery. But I wouldn't say that it's philosophy that we do with nursery, but we do ask some basic, similar kinds of questions. We get the nursery children used to, you know, used to using why and because, if, then, answering basic questions in a structured way. So that by the time they get to, you know, they get older, then we can start to engage in some really good and proper philosophical discussions. But interestingly, it doesn't take long for them to be able to do that. When I do work with them from very, very young, we find that by year one or two, they're starting to have some really, really interesting discussions and ideas, such as, you know, year one children discussing whether or not the mind and brain are the same thing, coming up with all sorts of theories and ideas about how the brain and mind work and why they might be different.
Peter, I think if parents actually stop and reflect, their children come up with these questions every day, countless times. You know, why is the leaf brown, or why is the sky blue, or why am I here, where do I go when I die? They're full of, it's just parents, I feel, might feel at sea in terms of they don't know how to facilitate the conversation. So I really like the structure of your three R's.
Oh, yeah.
Because it helps us kind of, we know where we're trying to head in the conversation towards that reevaluation, encouraging reevaluation, and not sort of pushing them into an opinion, but
indeed,
rather facilitating their thinking about the question.
I think that's it. I think that's the key, is especially as a parent, you know, because you're not likely to have gone through training and questioning and all the sort of stuff that teachers might have gone through. So the key thing for a parent to bear in mind is to try not to push an opinion on them. Try not to, you know, just let them explore. So for instance, you know, Daddy, Mummy, is Santa real? It's always a big question, that one. You know, how do you as parents deal with such a question as that? You know, how do I respond? And I think a really good way is to just allow them to explore it all for themselves. And if a child comes up with a problem, like, you know, how does Santa get round all the houses in one night? You know, they themselves have discovered a problem. So say to them, well, would that be a problem? Why would it be a problem? And you simply question them so that they're exploring that, the point that they've raised for themselves. And, you know, at some point they'll come to their own judgments and conclusions about whether they think Santa's real.
I think as parents it's so easy to just give them a answer. We're tempted just to say what we think, and that puts a cap on it, rather than helping them. They're trying to evolve their own thinking. So it makes total sense. We're nodding with guilt in the studio.
just imagine everything you're saying to avoid doing is exactly what I'm doing. I mean, and I feel completely at sea with a subject like philosophy. It's so alien to me. I've never studied it, you know, so it's very daunting for me as a parent to even embrace the concepts that you're saying, because they're so unfamiliar to me. But I feel excited at the idea that I could use these concepts with my son and daughter, you know, and I can't believe that you're saying year one children having that conversation. That's my son's year, you know, I mean, that they would have that conversation. But it's so exciting to think that they could do that.
Yeah, that's right. Although don't feel too guilty, because I myself have a 3.5-year-old, well, nearly 4-year-old now, and sometimes even I'm driven to say, you know, because it does. we all get there. And of course, there is a point at which, you know, you just have to say, I just don't know. I don't know, you know.
And that's lovely, isn't it? Because sometimes there isn't a right or wrong answer. It's just a, you know...
Well, that's right. Sometimes there isn't a right or wrong answer. Sometimes there is. And sometimes you just don't know. And that's the thing, you know, say it. When you don't know it, say it.
Peter, one of the lovely things that you mentioned, you're all over the web with lots of lovely talks that we have access to, which is great.
Yeah.
One of the things you mentioned is that philosophy begins with puzzlement. And I think that's wonderful, because actually what we're talking about here is, as parents or teachers, facilitating, you know, a curiosity. And, and that puzzlement is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
You've got it. And as I said earlier, you know, the first of the R's is to respond. Okay? You respond to something. But you've got to have something to respond to. And philosophy cannot begin unless someone is puzzled by something. If something is odd and you can't quite make sense of it. And actually, reality is like that. There's lots about reality and about life that doesn't quite make sense. And I would say that philosophy begins the moment you're old enough to sort of grasp that, the moment you're old enough to see that things don't all fit together. And, for instance, very, very young children are fascinated by the concept of change, because on the one hand they see things as static objects, you know, me, you, discrete static objects, and, you know, I'm just me. But then on the other hand they see that things change over time, and things are not the same thing over time. So then they've got this problem, you know, if something changes over time, but I know that thing is this, you know, a thing, whether it's a ship or me, we have a bit of a problem. How can I be the same thing? How can I remain the same? And even children can grasp those sorts of concepts, and they find them puzzling. So many of them, when I come in and run a session on exactly that, that sort of puzzle, they will already have been, you know, in some way affected by those thoughts. They're not always aware of it. They are sensitive to them.
And Peter, I'm just playing devil's advocate here for a second. I'm sure people say to you quite a lot, literacy and numeracy levels haven't improved in 55 years. Do teachers have time and energy to be concentrating on philosophy when they should get the core kind of the basics right first?
Yeah, well, that is often said, but I mean, it's just look at that. I think those statistics are taken from Robin Alexander's Cambridge Review. And he himself said the reason why they haven't improved in 55 years is because teachers are teaching to the test and not teaching to deepen understanding. So straight away, that there we have it. You know, it seems to be that actually not addressing reasoning and thinking, good thinking, is the very reason why the three R's are not improving. So there you are. It's that's why we say that actually you need the first R, reasoning, because until you sort out that stuff, the other stuff's not going to improve.
That makes sense, absolutely. And is there anything, any new exciting developments in the new curriculum that kind of make more space for philosophy?
Well, indeed. I mean, the way the last government has played it is that they've actually reduced the amount that's in the core curriculum, and they've given space in what they call the local curriculum, space for head teachers to make decisions about how they fill the curriculum. So they've reduced the core curriculum, which means that, you know, and I think, in fact, that the government themselves recommended such things as philosophy in schools to fill that time as one thing in which you can do to improve your and enrich your school.
And Peter, there's an enormous link, isn't there, that parents need to sort of understand between what you're doing with young children or primary school children and the graduates who are expecting to graduate with those thinking skills.
That's right. And one of the things that keeps coming up in articles in the TES, I keep coming seeing these articles saying that graduates these days are coming with less and less critical thinking skills. They're not able to sort of properly evaluate information which is given to them in a structured and disciplined way. More and more this is coming up, that people are not able to use their initiative. They need to be supported too much. So this is part and parcel down to the fact that the whole system is not really making room for independent learning.
Which is wonderful incentive for parents to do it at home.
That's it.
And what if your school hasn't got philosophy on the agenda at all? What would you suggest a parent does to kind of influence the school to take it more seriously?
Well, they can always put some stuff under the nose of the head teacher. You know, maybe you send them a link of one of the talks that I've done, or something like that, or some of the literature. Get them in touch with us. There's all sorts of things they can do. But if it's really not working, then what we've done as part of today's show, we've put together a new blog that is going live now on www.philosophy-foundation.org/blog. And if you go there, you'll find we've put together a list of hints and tips for parents if they wanted to try and put something together themselves. Maybe an after-school club for themselves. I mean, obviously, ideally, it's better if they get it in the school and they get specialists in, such as ourselves or SAPERE, another organisation that does this. But if they just want to have some fun after school with something like a philosophy club, then go there and find some hints and tips on how to put it together.
That is wonderful. What a great resource for our parents to have. We'll obviously have that on our Facebook page within seconds. I'm sure the wonderful Julie is on the case, and we'll share that and repeat it over the week. But that's a fantastic initiative. Thank you for doing that, Peter.
Fantastic. No problem.
So would you go into schools? How many schools have you worked in at this stage?
Oh, I've worked in many schools. The organisation, I think, is currently working in 66 schools or something like that that we're working in at the moment, yeah.
So there's at the Philosophy Foundation, there's an enormous team of you working, you know, it's not just you. Tell us a little bit about
that. Right. Well, we're not enormous, but we are growing. So there's probably about 20 of us out there working in different schools, some of us working full-time, some part-time, varying degrees. And we go around to primary and secondary schools, mainly state schools, but also a few independent schools, and run sessions of all kinds, yeah.
And Peter, we've just had a query about whether you go into schools. Is it just in London where you're based, or is it in Hertfordshire?
Well, we are mainly London-based. Hertfordshire is not that far from London, so and we do have people who are more north-based, so we can reach that far.
Fantastic. Thanks a million for joining us so far.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Take care. Welcome back to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. So tonight's all about philosophy, and we've been talking to Dr. Peter Worley about his organisation, the Philosophy Foundation, and his contribution to philosophy in education. And now we're delighted to be joined by Dr. Catherine McCall, who's a leading philosopher and educationist, and she's been doing philosophy, I must ask her about that, in schools for about over 30 years, and next year actually is the 30th anniversary. Dr. Catherine McCall, thanks for joining us on The Parents Show.
Oh, thank you, and good evening.
So, 30 years next year.
Yes, it is. Well, it's 30 years since I first introduced the idea to the UK. In fact, at a special sort of presentation conference at Liverpool University. So, we thought we might just mark that, because it's often said that it takes 30 years for a new idea to be accepted. And in a way, I think this is coming true, that more and more people are becoming aware of the idea that young children and people of all ages can actually philosophize.
It's an amazing, I have to say, an amazing concept for me. Can children get philosophy, do you think?
Yes, and the kind of philosophizing that I do with young children, and also the Philosophy Foundation, Peter, we've just been talking to, it's not academic philosophy in the way that you would do at university. It's not learning, you know, all the great philosophers and the technical language. It's rather facilitating children to think in a philosophical way, to reason and to reason about philosophical concepts. And certainly my experience has been that with the method that I developed, with the COPI method, young children can actually find it easier than some adults. They are not as sort of borne down by ideas that they already have. So for them, it's fresh, it's new, they will experiment, they'll try out these ideas, and they don't see it as difficult. Whereas many adults actually do find it quite difficult.
Absolutely. I think I think that applies to me, definitely. And is there a difference between philosophy and thinking philosophically?
There's, let's say, what people would assume philosophy to be is really the discipline of philosophy. And that's generally understood to be an academic approach to philosophy. And as I mentioned before, it can be rather technical with a very sort of specialized language. And that language can be a barrier to many people. Whereas philosophical thinking, the way that we look at it, is trying to take the ideas themselves, but to express them in ordinary language so that it's accessible to everyone, whatever the age, whatever the background. And of course, we do it in speaking orally, which means that literacy skills are not necessary. And the wonderful thing about philosophical thinking is that the ideas that we are striving to examine and to reason about underlie all experience. So you don't need to have a huge life experience. I think Peter gave you an example of looking at the idea of fairness. Even a very young child has a notion of this. And most of the ideas in philosophy are like this, that you can find a kind of example or a kind of situation that children can relate to, and under guidance they can then start to examine it.
Now, Catherine, a little bird told us about some wonderful work you've done in schools in Glasgow. And we'd love to know some of your experience of working in school, you know, some lovely stories about how children responded to the work that you've done. Don't be modest now.
Well, I tell you, I think probably the project that I was most proud of was, in fact, working with parents and children. And this is, in fact, was an after-school program in one of the very deprived areas of Glasgow, where we had parents, well, carers, really. One was a grandmother, there was a father, there were a few single mothers, whose children had been identified as being in trouble at school, not learning. And they came along to a project that was funded, you know, especially to see if we could help in this way. And they began to talk to each other. And what emerged from this project was that the adults and the children, the parents and the children, they really didn't talk prior. And so after they'd been involved in doing this philosophical thinking, I had them both in separate groups, but we used exactly the same story with both groups. So they became curious as to what each other were thinking about these ideas, and they would discuss these when they went home. And it massively increased the kind and the quality of the communication between the children and the parents. So much so that these children, in fact, they came from different schools, and the schools didn't know about the project. But we began to get inquiries because the children were improving so much in school in their own learning that the schools knew something must be happening at home. And that's partly how, and of course then the newspapers got hold of it too, so there was quite a lot of publicity about this project. But it had an enormous impact. Children in this group would actually tell us that their parents couldn't read. And part of what we were doing involved a little bit of reading, just a tiny bit to start, you know, the whole discussion. By the end, all the parents were reading, all the children were reading. They were actually going to the library to find things to read. It really had an enormous impact on their lives.
You can imagine that in sort of articulating and in discussing and arguing, it helps on so many levels with social confidence and the way they, as you've described, engage with each other.
It does. And one of the features of the method that I use to philosophize is that I actually try to bring out difference and disagreement. Now, at first, this can be quite uncomfortable, but it had a huge effect, especially in these deprived areas in Glasgow in the west of Scotland, where there are sectarian differences, where communities see each other almost as the enemy. And to get children to actually come to a stage where they are very happy to be disagreed with, and adults, where they're looking forward to something that's different, where they welcome difference instead of being frightened by it and find it threatening, again, it made an enormous impact. It's not just in their, you know, academic achievement, but in their, as you say, their social interactions. It diminished violence in some areas. And philosophy is so fundamental, I have to say. You can tell I'm so keen. This is my life's work. And it really impacts every part of, I think, being a human being.
I think the word in my mind is that's coming up again is mindset. We're teaching children to think creatively, innovatively, to think openly, to question everything.
Critically.
And yeah. Critically. It's just wonderful.
Yes. And sometimes people think, well, isn't this going to lead to people just having no beliefs, being cynical? But it doesn't. It actually empowers children to become enthusiastic. It gives them, as you say, the confidence to argue a case, to see something through, and to think about all the possible consequences of certain ideas. And I mean, we've just seen this enormous democratic happening in Scotland, where we had young people involved in really intelligent debate and dialogue that really mattered. And in a sense, this is what we aim at, that children, young people, teenagers, adults as well. I mean, I see actually no difference between children and adults in this respect. They need to have the tools, the skills to be able to understand their own thinking and develop their own thinking, but then to push and to follow the argument through and to be confident with it.
Fantastic. What an amazing life skill, really. I mean, it's just...
Can I just add, because I heard a little bit earlier in the program, we did some empirical research in America, and the children who'd been exposed to philosophical thinking and philosophical reasoning increased their scores in mathematics by 30% over control groups who hadn't done it. And just to sort of underline this idea that if you can improve thinking and reasoning, you actually then will improve the other basic skills.
It sounds like, of course, they value flexibility in mathematical thinking in schools. You know,
indeed.
And that's really what you're highlighting.
Yes. And in fact, mathematics, the way mathematicians think is very creative as well.
Yes.
And it's so far from the way math is sometimes taught, I have to say. I mean, the way I was taught partly when I was at school, where you are simply learning and applying, you know, formula or learning rules. Really, you need people to be reasoning, to be thinking creatively, but to be following logical rules.
And I think they realised quite recently, there was a piece of research on very able children in mathematics, and they had been children who were taught using a problem-based approach. So it wasn't learning,
yes.
It was exploring and being okay with getting it wrong and going back and thinking differently about a problem.
Yes. And sometimes some people in this field will explain philosophical thinking or philosophizing as problematizing. So you take something that doesn't necessarily appear to be contestable or difficult, and you look at how it can be a problem by looking at, well, what about this counterexample, or what about that conclusion if you follow that line of thinking? And so you're actually beginning to enjoy problems.
Fantastic. I'm afraid we're running out of time, and we haven't even had a chance to mention all the fantastic books that you've written, but we are going to we're going to write it on our Facebook page, and we'll let our listeners know about what you've written. And in fact, education is just one string to your bow. You've applied philosophy in business, communities, professions, industry, government, and you've taught across the board. It's fantastic. We're very honoured to have you on the Parents Show this evening.
Well, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed the programme, and I really like your radio programme here.
Thanks very much, Dr. McCall.
Okay, bye-bye.
All the best. Thank you so much. Bye.
Now, just to round up our talk on philosophy this evening, we wanted to bring Peter Worley, the CEO of the Philosophy Foundation, back to give us his final thoughts. Peter, are you there?
I am indeed.
Tell us how you'd like to summarise what you'd like parents to walk away with from this discussion this evening.
Well, I mean, I think one thing, as Catherine just sort of alluded to, philosophy is not just this sort of extra thing that we're trying to sort of make a special case for or special pleading. I think there's a sense in which philosophy is really, really central. I mean, A.C. Grayling reduced in one of his books, he says that education is about informing people and about teaching to think. And if education really is reducible to those two things, then teaching to think connects with philosophy. Because philosophy is teaching people to think well. And if you think about the implications of this, you know, a world where people are not rational, where people don't respond sensitively to dialogue in the correct kind of way, all sorts of problems can occur. You know, having people and the citizens being able to critically evaluate what's going on is a really great protection against things such as propaganda and against abuses from the state. So there's all sorts of ways in which it's really, really, really important to arm our citizens with the tools of critical thinking, of being able to think well in a dialogue sense. So in other words, you know, conversationally with each other, as Catherine alluded to, with the way in which the young people have engaged with the referendum in Scotland.
Fantastic.
So it really is the method beyond method. It's the thing which, in a way, keeps a check on everything else, making sure we're doing it right and well.
Peter, we could go on all night. Sadly, the show isn't 2 hours long. We'd love it to be. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All the best.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.